Chapter 24, At the Police Station. Melissa was kneeling next to Arbeck. She was naked and collared as usual, with her hands cuffed behind her back. They were in a back office at the local police station. Next to her was Arbeck, and they were in front of the desk of the judicial officer who was tending to them. The thought that she might soon be freed lifted her spirits. She had suffered being naked like an animal, and being locked in this demeaning collar and the treatments that came with it for 2 weeks, and her quarantine period was officially over. That meant Arbeck could finally take her to the police station and have her collar swapped for his own, which he could then remove to set her free. Over the last 10 days, Melissa had reluctantly assumed the role of a slave. Subjected to numerous instances of being cuffed, zip-tied, or leashed, she never grew accustomed to this treatment, and the nonchalant manner in which it was inflicted upon her always disturbed her. She was used to having rights, to the notion that no one had the authority to restrain her. But since being stripped of her rights, it appeared that every shop or restaurant owner believed they had the power to cuff her, leash her, or, in particularly unfortunate situations, confine her to a stable during her visits. One establishment required slaves' hands to be bound inside for hygiene reasons, to prevent them from touching anything. They had opted to sit outside to avoid this, but when it started to rain, they moved indoors to finish their meal. Without handcuffs at hand, the restaurant supplied zip ties for the purpose. Zahara had taken it upon herself to restrain Melissa, instructing her to turn around and cross her wrists behind her back. She then secured the zip tie, adjusting it multiple times until, with a final tug, Melissa let out a sharp,
"Ouch!"
as the plastic bit into her skin. There was no loosening the zip tie once it was set, so Zahara left it as was, and Melissa had to find a way to relax her hands to ease the constriction. From that day forward, she preferred handcuffs to zip ties. She had even reluctantly asked Arbeck to buy handcuffs for her, so she wouldn't end up in a situation in which she'd be zip-tied. Upon arriving at the police station with Arbeck, the receptionist had casually handcuffed Melissa. There was no need for slaves to use their hands at the station, so cuffing them was considered a standard security measure. It was akin to the straightforward rules for leashing or muzzling a dog, depending on the location. At the police station, it was routine to cuff slaves. As she knelt, she gave a slight tug to the cuffs, which firmly kept her hands restrained behind her back, rendering them useless. She lowered her head in acquiescence to how things were. Her new collar was on the desk. Melissa didn't want any collar at all, but Arbeck couldn't set her free here in front of the judicial officer. If the judicial officer knew that Melissa was free, then he would look into her and find that she didn't have a visa. If she was free, she would require a visa, as any non-citizen would. Since she didn't have one, she would be arrested and deported. Melissa wished for nothing more than to leave this country, but she wanted to do this on her terms. She wanted to first have some clothes again, and maybe even get the ear tag off. And if Arbeck could get her belongings back, she would even have her passport again. Then she would surrender to the authorities at the airport a few hours before a flight went out. That way she wouldn't have to go into immigration detention at all. And so it was crucial that they kept up the appearance that she'd remain enslaved before the officer. They had bought a collar for her at the Yoke and Lock shop. Arbeck had proposed Arbeck's Mischief Maker as the engraving. But Melissa hadn't found this funny. The shop owner had proposed the more traditional house slave Melissa, property of Arbeck Gurton, and they went with that. The judicial officer had written down Melissa's caller ID and was typing something on his computer. After reading for a while, he said,
"According to our file, a lien has been recorded against your slave."
Melissa winced at those words. She didn't know what this meant, but she sensed trouble incoming. Arbeck asked,
"What do you mean by this?"
I can see from our file that your slave is subject to a lien in favor of the Grain and Gain Bank. Here is a scan of the signed contract. Is this not your signature, Mr. Gautam?
The judicial officer swiveled the screen around.
Oh yeah, this is the loan I took out 2 weeks ago for... something.
Arbeck said, peering at the screen. It was the loan used for the bribe money to get Melissa out of the health office. Luckily, he caught himself before finishing that sentence.
What does this mean?
Melissa blurted out, alarmed by this. She got a judgmental look from the judicial officer, but no answer. Melissa remembered that she had spoken without permission. As a slave, she was legally incompetent, so even if she had permission, the judicial officer would not have dealt with her.
What does this mean?
Arbeck said, confused.
You have put your slave up as collateral against this loan,
the judicial officer explained.
That means you don't have full ownership of Melissa. Because of this, both you and the Grain and Gain Bank have legal claims on Ms. Mara. The purpose of the state collars is to ensure that the contractual obligations of both parties are met.
So we can't use my collar then?
Arbeck asked.
No,
the judicial officer explained.
The collar signifies ownership, but since you do not have complete ownership due to the line held by the Grain and Gain Bank, you cannot replace it with one of your own. The line establishes that a third party has certain legal rights over the slave, which must be considered. The purpose of the state collars is to ensure that all claims are verified prior to any action being taken. For instance, you cannot sell her or take her out of Grabezian jurisdiction without considering those rights. This system guarantees the protection of all parties' interests, as you can appreciate.
So I can't have the state collar removed?
Arbeck inquired, his voice tinged with concern.
You are certainly able to have it removed,
the judicial officer responded.
Upon repayment of the loan, the lien will be discharged, thereby restoring your full ownership rights, and we can proceed with the collar exchange.
But I don't have that kind of money,
Arbeck exclaimed.
Of course,
the judicial officer acknowledged.
I can see that there is a structured bi-weekly repayment plan in place, scheduled to align with typical pay cycles. Though I am not familiar with the specifics, these appear to be standard contractual terms. By adhering to these payments, you will regain full ownership.
So there is nothing we can do now?
Melissa asked with a trembling voice. She was freaking out. She hated this caller. Arbeck had promised her freedom after the 2 weeks of quarantine were over. She had served her time, and now she wanted this damn caller off her. She yearned for the simple dignity of clothing and the freedom to no longer have to kneel before free people and be casually chained and caged like an animal. But her hopes were being dashed. She would continue to be enslaved to Arbeck, and she couldn't make out from the discussion how long her enslavement would last.
Mr. Gautam,
the judicial officer continued, disregarding Melissa's question.
This is not a significant issue. It's merely a matter of the collar. You retain control over your slave in all other respects. She will continue to serve you as before. Just manage the repayment schedule, and once the debt is cleared, you can affix your own collar. And it does look nice,
he said, looking at the Arbex collar on the table and then smiling at Melissa.
Not like the dull steel collars the state uses. This is a nice quality collar. You must be really fond of your slave, Mr. Gautam. She is such a cute one.
How could this happen?
Melissa cried as they stepped out, the path home stretching bleakly ahead. Melissa was next to Arbeck, naked as usual and visibly upset. During the last 10 days, she had had to maintain a meek demeanor in public to not rouse public suspicion for being out of character. She was supposed to be in quarantine at the health office, so the wrong kind of attention could have uncovered this and brought her friends into trouble who had gotten her out early. But now those days were over. She was officially dismissed from the health office and was no longer bound by her promise to keep up pretenses. And she was furious.
Arbeck, you promised you would free me today,
Melissa said.
How could you put me up as collateral for a loan? That's nuts. Completely nuts.
Her mind raced with scenarios of what might happen if Arbeck couldn't repay the loan. Could she be taken away from him? Sold to someone else? The thought of being repossessed like a car made her stomach churn with fear. Her hands clenched into fists, her nails digging into her palms as she tried to steady her trembling body.
I don't know,
Arbeck said.
I didn't put you up as collateral. He tried to remember what happened on that fateful Friday. I asked them for money. And the guy at the Grain and Gain Bank asked for my ID. He typed it into his computer, and then... Oh yeah, he said that, I have a title on a slave. He said your name. I was in their system as your owner. And I said, yeah. And then he said something like, sure, no problem. I think we can do something for you.
She felt her nudity more acutely now, not just for her physical exposure, but the feeling of having her hopes dashed and that she would continue to be naked like this for an unknown amount of time. She wrapped her arms around herself in a futile attempt to cover up and felt the eyes of passersby on her poking into her like needles.
Melissa, I had no idea what he meant by that. I swear, he never said the word collateral or what this guy said today. What was it? Lien. He offered me a loan, and I took it. We needed the money quickly to get you out.
Melissa was angry and frustrated, but she heard the regret in his words, and what he said did sound like something he would do. He had wanted to get her out of the health office. That was all that had mattered to him. The prospect that she might remain a slave, bound to this life of subservience and nudity, felt to her like a cold chain wrapping around her heart. Her collar felt heavier than ever. She imagined another day, another week, another month being forced to be naked with that hated collar locked on her, and the thought was suffocating.
Arbeck, how long will it take to pay off this loan?
Melissa's voice trembled, her tone desperate as they walked back home. She felt the warm air against her bare skin. Her heart pounded with a mixture of fear and urgency, and she felt the weight of her collar around her neck. Arbeck's face was a canvas of guilt and confusion. He hesitated before speaking, his gaze avoiding hers.
Well, if we stick to the schedule they've set up, it's about 2 years.
He admitted, his voice barely above a whisper.
2 years,
Melissa echoed, her voice rising in shock, her steps faltering. The ground seemed to tilt beneath her. 2 years chained to this life, this identity she hadn't chosen, felt like an eternity. Her mind reeled at the thought, despair clawing at her insides.
I know it sounds bad, but it's not set in stone, Mel.
Arbeck hurried to explain, his words tumbling out as he tried to grasp her hand to steady her.
If I can get more money, if I can find some way to earn more, we can pay it off faster. 2 years is the maximum. It's not guaranteed to take that long.
Melissa pulled her hand away. Her emotions were a chaos within her. She felt betrayed, not just by Arbeck's actions, but by the cruel twist of fate that now held her in chains beyond what she had imagined. The feeling of the sand under her feet reminded her of her captive state, of the freedom that had been so close but had been pushed back so impossibly far. Her skin prickled with goosebumps forming from the dread of her extended servitude.
But how, Arbeck? How are you going to get enough money?
Her voice was sharp with the edge of panic. She looked around, seeing the natives give her curious or indifferent glances. Her nudity, once a symbol of her temporary plight, now seemed like a permanent brand.
I'll work. I'll find extra jobs. Maybe I can get help from friends, from my family.
Arbeck's words were laced with determination, but Melissa could hear the uncertainty in them. His attempts at reassurance felt weak against the overwhelming reality she was facing.
"And if you can't?"
she countered, her gaze piercing into him. The reality of her life as a slave, potentially for years, made her throat tighten. Her breaths were shallow as she fought back tears of frustration and fear.
"I can't live like this, Arbeck. I just can't,"
she said.
"I will, Melissa. I promise. We'll figure this out together. You won't be like this for 2 years, I swear."
Arbeck insisted, his tone more resolute now. He moved closer and hugged her. She stiffened, and the warmth of his clothed body against her bare skin felt more like a reminder of her nakedness rather than comfort. Melissa's mind raced with desperate plans, each one more far-fetched than the last. The idea of working, of doing anything to hasten her freedom, was appealing, but as a slave, there wasn't anything she could do. She felt trapped, not just by the collar around her neck, but by the invisible chains of bureaucracy and ownership. She remembered how Tariq had wondered out loud why a bank would give out such a loan to Arbeck, and Arbeck had explained it with his Arbeck charm. Well, now she knew what really happened. She was the collateral to this loan. He could not free her until he had paid the loan back.